This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. That writing major you took in college could become the lifeline to help you cope with loss and pain years later. That's what Gabriella Berman of Huntington Woods has discovered. She turned the pain and anguish over the death of her 5.5-year-old daughter into a collection of 7 essays titled Michaela. The essays were published as a chapbook by the Michigan Writers Cooperative Press of Traverse City. Gabriella Berman is with us now, and it is really, really great to meet you because your book really, really touched me. We've all had loss in our life, and I think the idea that you took the death of your little girl and then that powered these essays and helped you get back in touch with your writing is just very compelling. Did you think that was going to happen as you were going through that ordeal?
No. I'll tell you, I had been writing my whole life and worked as a journalist. And then when she was born and she was fraught with special needs, her diagnosis with cerebral palsy, my husband and I threw ourselves into her care, and our lives became so full of purpose and meaning, and I always called it an elevated existence, that writing almost seemed kind of trivial, and I set it aside. That was after she had an initial first year of many, many difficulties, and actually I rebelled against writing initially. I said, who would want to document this kind of pain and suffering? And so for the first year or two of her life, I actually didn't write at all.
You were very, very busy, and you were very...
I was busy with her.
Yes.
And my attitude towards writing kind of ebbed, and then after she passed, it actually...
It was waiting.
Kind of like a buoy, like a lifeline, like a life. Mostly because I had these younger children by then. And for me, at first, I guess it was the journalist mind kicking in again that I needed to document in chronological order. I started to tell the story of her life because it was going to be the way that they most remembered her because they were so young when she passed.
Well, in fact, you had your third was just 12 days old.
Yeah.
That's a lot to bear. And when I think about what you and your husband Adam had to go through, it really is, understatement of the year. It's one of the worst challenges anyone will face in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Michaela.
We gave all of our children these very strong Israeli Hebrew names, so we pronounce it Michaela, actually, which means who is like God, because we truly believe that everyone is made in God's image. And she was divine in her way. She was beautiful and resilient, and these, I believe, are traits that she inherited from my grandmother, who just passed, who was also very resilient.
Who was a Holocaust survivor.
Yes. She was delightful. She was delightful. She was content in how she was in her body. Her father and I, we pushed to try and help her to make the physical gains that would help her to live a little bit more of an independent, functional life because she was severely affected. But she made her needs known with her movements, with the blink of an eye, with the vocalizations she made, and she was... I mean, she was a very forceful, powerful presence. She was had a lot of admirers. She loved to be the center of attention. Her eyes lit up when her father walked into the room. And we traveled with her everywhere. And she really had a very full life. She was involved in school. She went to school like every other child because we believed so strongly in that her right to an education and in whatever manner she could have it. And I'm so proud to be a resident of Michigan because we educate our children with disabilities until age 26, which is a feather in our cap. She was influential and would have continued to be, I have no doubt.
And after that initial very, very rocky year, things did kind of level off and things seemed fine. She was 5.5, and when I read your essay describing how she died during the night, during a sleepover at Grandma's house. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking on a million different levels. When the phone rang, how did you know to say, is she dead?
I think because of what my mother, the construction of the sentence my mother spoke, all she said was, you better get over here. What could that have meant?
And the day of the call would be a day when it was on
when
the Sabbath.
It was an emergency, which we observe the Jewish Sabbath, so there are no phone calls. If it's a phone call from my parents' house, it's an emergency. And, of course, my first thought was that, you know, maybe my dad had had a heart attack or something had happened to my mother or something, or something that may have even happened to Michaela, but not this. You know, there was always in the back of my mind fear that, you know, she was more fragile than other children. She brought up a lot of phlegm when she coughed. Perhaps she had had a choking episode or something, but not this, because she was healthy and thriving.
Did losing your daughter change the way that you dealt with or thought of your other two girls, including the little one was 12 days old?
Yeah.
And then how old would three or so, wasn't she the other
one? She was about a little more than 2.5.
Oh,
yeah.
Little.
They were my only source of comfort, truly. I mean, husbands and wives grieve differently, just the way you cope with all kinds of things differently. And so as much as my husband and I supported each other in our grief as best we could, and we have a very strong marriage and I adore him, the children were my true senses of comfort. I nursed the baby for 3 years, and I'm sure that's no accident. And I became as focused as I had been on Michaela's care, I became on them. And I'm just... And like to this day, my raison d'etre is that they have happy, healthy, well-adjusted childhoods, because that's their birthright. And I didn't want any of that to change. And I didn't want them to see me succumb to depression.
So it pulled you through those darkest days.
They had to. They're the reason we live. I mean, you know.
And then comes the writing. And I'd like you, if you could, to read us an excerpt from Michaela. This is from the essay, "If I Should Disappear the Day After I Write This."
I want my children to know that I often had milk on my hands, in my breasts, and under my fingernails. All of it was sticky, and some of it synthetic, a vanilla-scented boxed concoction that nourished Michaela through her feeding tube and sustained her when her suck, swallow, breathe coordination would not. I want them to know that when the milk splattered, the syringes backed up, and geysers hit the ceiling, I gave myself wholly over to all three of my children. That while others bemoan the cumulative effect of crouching on one's knees to reach a child's eye level or to pick up yet another toy, I absorbed the blows of each mess and each tantrum, and even secretly relished these elemental forms of communication. I want these children to know that when I tinkered in the basement office and heard them crying at the top of the stairs, I let the screen go dark. I allow myself one writer's conference each year, leaving a refrigerator full of cooked food for my husband to serve, knowing my 3-day absence will exasperate him anyway. At the retreat, I ambush the accomplished among us at the coffee station with a single question: how do you do it? I'm seeking a thread I can follow, and I'm desperate. I want to pinpoint when these parent writers wake, do the laundry, kiss a knee, and tuck into bed, and where the writing sews in. They recoil. Just write, find a group, get an MFA. Then they shake their hair into their eyes, they press their backs against the table, and they flee from me. The air around me feels discernibly cooler, and I miss my children. And then, ironically, my teacher, a poet who spent years as a single father, urges me to treat your writing like another child. This becomes a matter of permission. I should be mothering my child. Having time to write evokes her absence, when I'd much rather continue to deny it. In college, I studied with Robert Stone and Chaim Potok and fantasized that my first collection of short stories would appear by age 30. After graduation, I supported myself as a journalist, having had the aha moment in college: I can get paid to write. And then, when I was 30, my firstborn Michaela arrived, dark-haired and soft-shouldered, full-term but deprived of oxygen during labor and delivery. She sustained a permanent brain injury that forever affected her motor center. She never walked or talked or ate in the ways we think when we consider these verbs. She still made her needs known, most forcefully when I fed her, and she didn't want another bite. She knocked my spoon-holding hand out of the way with her forearm, with a determination that needed no sound. I knew to listen. I assumed a new identity, that of special needs mother, and I was extraordinary. My writerly research skills were repurposed for medicine. Together with my husband, we sought therapies and procedures and treatments that would help Michaela fulfill her potential. After a first year fraught with seizures that were more devastating than the initial diagnosis of cerebral palsy, our capsized ship righted itself. Michaela slowly blossomed, and we delighted in her beauty, her loving disposition, and her ability to forgive the therapists who stretched her when she stiffened.
That's writer Gabriela Berman of Huntington Woods reading from her chapbook, Michaela, which is a collection of 7 essays about losing her daughter when she was just 5 and a half. What were you looking for in writing these essays?
I was looking for a way to perpetuate her existence, frankly. I have a difficult time with mortality myself, and I want to keep her alive as best I can, and she lives in the writing. I mean, more than that, I don't want to reduce her to a book. It's been quite something to see this book in print because it has accomplished the goal. Mm-hmm. But then I also look at it and say, this is...
She was so much more than the pages.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
You know, there's... it's a glimpse. It's a glimpse into who she was, who we were as a family, who we are as a family.
And you are sharing incredibly intimate moments and incredibly intimate pain, and you're putting them on these pages to live forever and to be read by strangers.
Yes, because we don't write to put things in a drawer.
What have you learned that through this entire experience of losing a beloved child and having to go through day after day, what can you share with us? How should we or how should we not talk to parents who've lost a child? Because I bet you've heard it from the good, the bad, and the ugly. You've probably heard it.
I could tell you stories. Yeah. Another gem is that everyone crowds around the bereaved in the beginning, which is wonderful and healing in some way. It's where are you going to be for that person a year from the event, or 5 years from the event, or 10 years from the event, because the event is finite and it's not. It stays with you forever. Time collapses in my mind. It could have been yesterday. I'm prepared for her to come back into the house if she shows up at my doorstep. And so people need to remember that. People need to remember that it's okay to continue to speak about the dead and to evoke her name, because it's the avoidance that causes more sorrow. I mean, the pain is always right here at the surface, right under my smile. And so it actually comforts me when you talk about my child to me, or when you talk about anyone's beloved, because you just want your loved ones to be remembered, that if they're not physically with us, that they're still with us.
How many years has it been now?
It's been 6.
Gabriela Berman, her chapbook, Michaela, was chosen for publishing by the Michigan Writers Cooperative Press in Traverse City. And it is, it's a brief read, but it packs a lot of power. Thank you very, very much for being here and sharing it with us.
Thank you very much.